You might be familiar with a man named Prince William from across the pond who is going to be king someday. We are not him. We are from the heart of Northern Virginia, and you're listening to the Other Prince William podcast, where we bring stories from business owners and leaders from our community in Greater Prince William County, Virginia. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with our proud sponsor, OmniRide. OmniRide, a quick and easy way to find your ride. Get there smarter with OmniRide, your public transportation agency located in Prince William, Virginia. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Other Prince William, a podcast that is produced by the Prince William Chamber of Commerce. I'm Bob Sweeney, the Chamber's president and CEO, and today we are here with my co-host, the mayor of Manassas, Michelle Davis Younger.
Hello. No introduction needed, right? You just said it. I am Michelle Davis Younger. I am the mayor of the wonderful and beautiful city of Manassas, and I'm so excited to be here today. This is such a great time.
Today, joining us is Pete Ebbick, a literal rock star.
Yes.
I say that a lot. Like, you're a rock star, but you are a rock star.
Yes.
So welcome,
Own
Pete.
It.
And
yes.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys. Thank you very much. It's awesome to be here. It's awesome to be here with both of you guys and in our wonderful town. This is an honor.
It's great. Yeah. So share some insights with us on your journey as a musician, how you got started. You know, the questions people always ask you when they meet. What made you do this?
My mom made me do this.
All right. Blame mom. Right? Mom's fault.
My mother was actually a gigantic music fan. Wow. And she, there's a lot of folklore to my mother, actually, is she used to go see Elvis perform before Elvis was a star.
Wow.
And, I don't know that they were ever super tight, but my mom had met him a few times.
Wow, cool.
And when I was 5 years old, my mom put a guitar in my hand, and I had no interest at all. I was born in 1972. I'm 51 years old. And then by a few years later, So in 78, I saw a commercial on TV for the band Kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that made sense to me.
Oh, yeah.
As a kid, because they look like superheroes. They look like cartoons.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I went, I got the guitar in the closet. And everything changed that
way.
I could be Ace Frehley.
So cool.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
And the ironic thing that you bring his name up is that one of the greatest things later in life in my journey is my heroes become my friends. I speak with Ace all the time.
Oh, my God.
And so it's funny that you say it.
Oh, that's my hero, though. I love it.
But so my mom wanted me to play the guitar. I had no interest.
Cool.
I saw Kiss. And once I saw Kiss, there was nothing else.
There's nothing else.
Until Shining Soul.
Okay. We'll get to that.
But my entire life, no sports, no hobbies, no nothing.
Wow.
From
wow.
5 years on until my 40s, it was just guitar all day, every day.
That's awesome.
You know, and that's how it happens.
So what everybody wants to know. I'm sorry, Bob.
But I was just going to think of that Michael Jordan quote that says you got to do 10,000 hours of something you love to be the best at what you are.
It's funny.
And you're up to like 80,000.
In my world, that's a quote from David Lee Roth. David claims that's his thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, David has been saying for years that 10,000, you have to put 10,000 hours into whatever it is
you
want to do.
Yeah.
I would think I have. I've never counted, but you would think so.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you probably have.
I imagine you have too.
No, this is about you now. So the question everybody wants to know, how did the collaboration with Bret Michaels, what made that happen? You gotta share that
for people
who don't know.
I was a gigantic Poison fan in the 80s. Gigantic. And in 1992, their guitar player, CeCe DeVille, left the band. And I had some contacts, even though I was only, I wasn't even 20 years old then, I had some contacts that knew the people in LA, and I was able to send in audition tapes.
Wow.
And because Poison's from Pennsylvania, even though they're considered a LA band, moved to LA to make it, they're from Pennsylvania. And we knew, Brett grew up 85 miles from right here.
Wow.
In Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
I knew that.
Yeah, sometimes when he's here, we'll drive up and visit his stepmother, as father recently passed away. And it's literally 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours of traffic. So we had a connection just from the coast, just the Mid-Atlantic. We're all, whether you're Virginia, Maryland, or Pennsylvania, or Delaware, we're all similar.
You know.
And so I didn't make the audition because I was too young. And they by that time, the L.A. scene was so big and prominent on MTV and the radio that they needed a hotshot L.A. guitar player. I mean, thousands of people auditioned.
Oh, I'm sure.
So it wasn't like I was second in the running.
Right. Yeah.
But I kept those contacts. And years later, 23 years ago, Brett went out on a solo tour with that Poison. And I called those people and got my band to be the opening band.
Oh.
And we played up and down the East Coast with Brett. And we did that for 2 years with him. And me and him got to be better friends. And then an opportunity came. This is one of my favorite stories still to this day. An opportunity came where he had a gig in Detroit at this thing called the Downtown Hoedown. It's a radio station gig. And he didn't want to bring his guys in from L.A. to do it. Something happened, and he just called me. He goes, do you think your band could do this gig with us? And he said, oh, it's a little radio gig.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've done little radio gigs with DC 101.
Right.
With 98 Rock. Yeah. Little radio gigs for the local band is going into the radio station and playing for, like, 20 people.
Right.
This was 15,000 people.
Wow.
I never asked the right questions. I just said, yes, let's go do it. And I show up that day.
You're like,
oh. Yeah. 15,000 people.
Wow.
And we didn't rehearse. Mm. And I blame that a little on Brett because he's the pro, and a little bit on me because we'd known each other from the 2 years of touring together. And he knew that we knew all the material. But what happens in the music business that most people don't realize, if you like your favorite artist and you go see them in concert and you don't realize, oh, that doesn't sound the way it used to. Songs evolve, right?
Yeah.
Even when you think you're playing them the same over 20, 30 years, they evolve. So we learned those songs as they were on the records 30 years ago. But he never really thought much about how different he does them. So we didn't rehearse and it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. And I remember thinking, oh man, that was it. That was my biggest chance. And I was getting older in life and my opportunity is gone. He's going to go tell everyone.
He's hot.
Yeah.
And it wasn't true.
Yeah. And then he called me a couple days after that and he said, how do you think that went? I said, man, that was terrible. It sucks. I'm so sorry. And he says, well, we're on the same page. I'm glad that you're professional enough to know that that wasn't great. He goes, and then we talked about not rehearsing or whatever. And then he says, let's try this one more time.
Oh,
and he goes, it's Memorial Day weekend.
Oh.
And he goes, I got a gig in Nashville, Tennessee, opening up for Lynyrd Skynyrd. Sold out 33,000 people at a place called Starwood Amphitheater. And we go down there, and again, no rehearsal. But he looked at me, and he goes, don't think about anything. Just go up there and be the you that I know. Don't be the you you want me to be. You think that I want you to be.
So awesome.
And we played at the last song, High Five, and I'm entering in May. It'll be 21 years.
Look at you.
Wow.
I love it.
And we've been all around the world.
So
we've
awesome.
Had, you know, he had the reality TV show Rock of Love, which was a giant hit. Me and him wrote the theme song to that. Spent 14 weeks at number one on the VH1 Countdown. There was three other videos we'd done over the years that went to number one. CMT, we released a couple country songs, and CMT, WMZQ actually broke the song. They were the first in the country to play it, and which is a local country radio station here. We've played all over the world. We've played in Saddam Hussein's palace.
Wow. So you
know,
did say that.
Yeah.
That was great. That's pretty awesome.
It's been a wonderful ride.
Great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What is, so you are a writer as well as a guitar player and backup singer, right? I've heard that. And what is your creative process like? When you get into writing a song, how does that like come? Yeah, how does that happen?
Well, because I'm a guitar player and a writer and a singer and a piano player sometimes.
Wow.
You find different inspiration in different ways. If I'm sitting at a piano and I'll bang something out, it's usually a ballad. I'm never going to write some ragtime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's not the way I play the piano. Yeah,
yeah. Beth, so, I hear you.
Don't say it, Bob.
To me, it usually starts with a lyric. Oh. Usually I get inspired to write about something.
Okay.
And then from there, I'll try to write a chorus or write a concept, and then I'll grab a guitar and start banging out ideas and see if that fits the lyric. You know, when I was younger, it was much faster. I could write a song a day.
Yeah.
And then inspiration dries up. You know, yeah. On the way here, I was actually, there's these moments, and I think it happens probably with everything, inspiration, no matter what you do, you know you want to be inspired. You know you should write. You know you should do whatever you have to do. Yeah. And some days you just don't have it in you.
Right.
But when it hits,
ooh,
yeah,
you gotta go.
It's a flood. Yeah.
And you can ask any songwriter in the world. A lot of times you wake up in the middle of the night with that idea, mm-hmm. and you better get your ass out of bed.
Yeah.
And figure out a way to write that idea.
That's right.
And for a long time, I tried to convince myself. I said, no. If it's any good, I'll remember it when I wake up in the morning.
At 20, No.
If you have an idea, you attack it, pull your car over. You know, before the digital world, every songwriter or guitar player in the world had one of those little micro cassette recorders in their car. If you could, guys, think back a million times that you may have seen someone pull over on the side of the road, they may have been an artist having an idea. They might not have that torture.
Right.
It's so funny.
The other Prince William podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, OmniRide. OmniRide is a public transportation agency located in the Prince William area of the Northern Virginia region. In an area known for some of the worst congestion in the United States, OmniRide strives to provide a family of travel options that meet the needs of the residents and businesses within our community. OmniRide's goal is to be recognized as the easier way for people to get where they want to go through multiple and convenient transit options, including our commuter and local bus services, carpools, vanpools, ride sharing, and their partnership with the instant carpooling community.
You say this is kind of my mind explosion because I think about foreigners, where English is a second language.
Uh-huh.
And I think about how they think sometimes, just like you're a guitarist. And so I always wondered in musicians' mindscape, is it the guitar that's first? Like, is it the melody or the beat and then the lyric? Or is it the...
Yeah, it comes both ways.
Yeah.
For me, like I said, mostly the lyrics, but if I'm sitting around just with my guitar in my hand and a riff comes out, then you just, you know, go straight to the studio and record the thing right away.
What is essential as a guitarist, literally one of the greatest guitarists in the world, what is your thinking about the essential equipment you need to have to be great?
That's an interesting story. That inspires me to tell a story that I would like to tell about beginning playing. When I was a kid, and we got into the guitar and I had that acoustic guitar that I was telling you about. My friend also had a guitar. A cheap junk acoustic guitar. And when my dad realized that this was happening, he went out and bought me a real Gibson Les Paul. Mm. I was a young kid with a Gibson Les Paul, but it was exactly like Ace Frehley's.
Yeah.
And it was a real thing, and it inspired me every day to play that thing, right? But my friend who had that junk guitar didn't want anything to do with it. And so for years and years and years, I taught at all the local music stores, and I would tell the parents, invest in a real instrument. That whole buy a cheap thing to begin on can backfire on you because they're harder to play. They're not as nice.
Right.
You know, you have the real thing in your hand and you like the instrument you like. It's like driving a car. If you like your car, you want to get it and drive it.
Yeah, yeah.
All the time.
You know?
Right.
And, the essentials to this day, I still, whether I'm playing at Central or I'm out in front of 30,000 or 40,000 people, I still very basic head and amp cabinet. You don't need a lot. You know, it depends. There's different, it's so much, it's art.
Mm.
And some people use a brush, some people use a spray paint, but I am still a plug and play. I don't use a ton of effects. And I just try to keep it like Slash from Guns N' Roses. I try to keep it kind of as raw as possible.
So we know you talked about, you know, your journey, Bret Michaels and all that. So there are highs and lows. What are some of the challenges being on the road, performing live?
You know,
there's highlights and there's challenges.
So there is. There is.
Cover,
if,
cover
I, if I can plug this, I just recently released my second book. It's a book called MTV Famous.
Okay.
And I tell a lot of the stories that you're at, the question you're asking in this book.
Oh, good.
But I can tell you that the highs and lows, it's like being bipolar. Because the highs are unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. And then you come.
But the lows are dark.
After it's over.
And I'll give you an example of the lowest of the low. This is going to be kind of a long story. I'll try to shorten it. But for me, the lowest of the low was me and my wife had broken up. And me and Bret had become the inseparable best friends. But the two other guys in the band are my guys from here in Manassas that I've been together with for over 36 years, right?
Yeah.
And as me and Brett's relationship tightened, theirs did not. So my wife and me had broken up. My two best friends had grown distant. It was to the point where me and Brett were riding in one bus and they were riding in another bus. But me and Brett were riding in the one bus together specifically because I'd become an integral part of doing business, the corporation, for Bret Michaels, and we were writing music together.
Sure.
So we had a studio set up in one bus, and we went on that bus, and the band and crew on another bus. So Bret, in 1988, had a number one song with Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
Yeah.
And in the 80s, if you had a number one song, that meant you sold millions of records.
Yeah.
Today, that,
not
doesn't
like
mean,
now,
that doesn't mean the same.
right?
And so, so it was a very lonely time in my life. And me and Bret had just written and recorded a song called Nothing to Lose. And Miley Cyrus sang on it. And the day that it debuted, at that time, that day, it had it became the number one played song on radio. And it had beat out Bon Jovi and Nickelback, which are two huge, huge bands who had released songs that same day, too. And I'm a gigantic Bon Jovi fan. And in my brain, it was a competition. It was like, I did something that the world likes better than Bon Jovi today. You know what I'm saying? Now, I know Miley Cyrus is on it, so that helped a lot. I was also right at the peak of Hannah Montana and her becoming, you know. So, but so my point of that was, we were, the bus had pulled up, it was a winter day in Iowa, in Dubuque, Iowa. And I was so excited that I woke Bret up. But it's the most played song on radio. Well, all the news. He was excited. Oh, that's great. That's great. How many copies did it sell? And I don't want to discuss the number. It was number one. That's all that matters.
Okay.
But the number was not what Every Rose's number was. And the way what I relate this emotion to, even though I'm not a sport guy, the best way I can paint this picture is you got someone like Bret who won the Super Bowl five times in his life with five number one hit songs, right? And then the game changes. And now the field's 50 yards instead of 100 yards. Winning that doesn't feel the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so he was like, oh, all right, great. And he went back to bed.
I'm done.
And there I am in this winter morning in Dubuque. And Dubuque, Iowa is cold.
Yeah.
And my wife doesn't give a shit. My two friends could care less. And Bret didn't really care the way I did. And I literally just dropped to my knees on the bus and started crying because it was the greatest moment of my entire life. And it was the single most loneliest moment I'd ever had.
Wow.
And you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You get that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a terrible feeling,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
I think all terrible stories start in Dubuque, though.
So that was the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
You know, the highest of the high.
Highs, yeah.
Like I said a few minutes ago, when we, Saddam had.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Saddam had been captured, but he hadn't been executed yet. That's a terrible
thing. I'm
trying to paint the timeline. But the war was still going on, and we were invited to perform for the troops.
Wow.
Like a USO type of thing. And Bret had said, if we're going to go, Bret and me share a very similar, our parents were military, but we didn't go to the military. And I have a regret for that because I'm a huge military supporter. It's not a politics thing. It's a support for the people who defend our country. And I think both of us feel this kind of guilt that we maybe were wimps and didn't do that. You know what I mean? And so when the opportunity came to go, he was going. And he said, if I'm going to go over, we're not just going to go to Baghdad and protect it by everything. I want to go to the bases. I want to go to the forward operating bases. And I don't know if you know much about any of those places, but there's a place called Alisad, Anaconda, Stryker. And these were real, real. The war was happening.
Yeah.
I have a picture on my phone where we were playing and the raids, the sirens went off. And we had to go down in the underground bunker, right? And I look at this figure sometimes, and I'm sitting up against this wall. Looks like this, because it's just plywood underground. And I have my guitar on my lap, and my eyes are closed. And in all honesty, I'm waiting to die. I've come to peace with this. And Brett's over here waiting to die. And the other bands, they were, right? Because the sirens are going on. Yeah. But we brought with us a Rolling Stone photographer,
wow.
Right? Yeah. And that guy didn't care. He was getting those pictures shots. Because if we live through this and he gets to cover Rolling Stone, I remember thinking, this guy's nuts, because
right.
But he didn't care. He was getting these pictures and he got some amazing pictures.
Oh,
but
wow.
We went over there and we played to those troops and they were so grateful. And then to go and play in Saddam's opera house.
God.
I don't know if you know much about what he had.
Nope.
But that guy lived in a fantasy.
Yeah.
He had an entire real life Flintstones village built for his children. Like you can live anyway, but just the American flag was flying and there was maybe 600 or 700 American troops and we were performing for them in a moment where history was changing. You know what I'm saying?
So amazing.
And that was amazing to me. That was an incredible high.
That's in the book, right?
Oh, yeah.
Gotta get the book.
And there's a lot of highs. The first time I ever played Jiffy Lube. You wait your whole life. But I will tell you this. It's Nissan Pavilion is what it was always called.
Yeah.
And the year I played, it was the year they changed it. And I waited my whole life to play Nissan. Nissan, and I'll tell you, Jiffy Lube.
Yeah.
But to do that, those amphitheaters in your hometown.
Yeah.
Oh,
That's an unreal hometown experience.
Hometown hero.
Yeah, you know.
Definitely you
know,
are.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But the highs do outweigh the lows.
Oh, always.
You know,
always.
But the lows
always.
Are dark.
Yeah. We have a common history that you do not know. I was hired on November 10th was my first day on the job. And Patrick Small, the Director of Economic Development from the City of Manassas, had a secret that he was keeping for everybody.
Uh-huh.
And it was that you were playing at Sinistral,
yes.
And Brett Michael was going to show up.
Secret, yeah.
And
all of a sudden
he says, let's go. So he gets me over there.
Oh,
we go backstage.
Amazing.
I meet you. I've got pictures of my first day of work with you and Brett Michael on my phone.
That was your first day.
First day. I was like, oh my God.
I was amazed at that because it made CNN.
Yeah, it was there was 500 people there, or maybe more.
Crazy.
But we do a lot of things that don't make sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
But that was an interesting day because we played in North Carolina the night before. I think Cherokee. I may be wrong about that. Somewhere in that area. And we were driving up, and Brett decided he was going to come home with me instead of fly home, work on music, whatever we're going to do. And sometimes he's aloof to anything anyone else might be doing. And so he's like, I was like, you can come, but we're going to have to work Sunday because I have a gig at Central.
Right.
I said, you stay at the house, whatever you want to do. Well, maybe I'll come, which is very rare because he is reckless. He's a true reckless.
Day offs are important.
Yeah.
You need to recollect.
Yeah. And I said, all right, well, I'll call and I'll get you a section set up. I'll make sure. All right. Well, don't tell anyone. And then in the course of driving from Cherokee or Charlotte to here, he goes, well, maybe start telling people I might come. I said, you got to tell me. You have to tell me yes or no on this.
Right.
Because if I tell everyone, you have to come.
Yeah.
He goes, all right. Yeah. I'll come up. He goes, I'll come in and I'll play two songs.
Yeah.
And we had it all arranged with my friends. Were you there when he got there?
Yeah.
So we brought him in the back.
And
my friend Rick brought him in, and he was supposed to come to that back, play two songs, and get out that back door. But I didn't read very well.
Yeah, you knew where to go.
He started having a good time.
Yeah.
And we stayed, and he stayed up on that stage, and
moved
off and played with us. Then I get nervous because I like when I lose sight of him, it's not like he's a child. Right. He's a grown man, but
feel responsible.
Yeah, you know the reason why he's there.
Yeah.
Where did he go? And I went running everywhere, and I found him in the back. Were you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, it was Patrick, and you, Blaine.
Yeah, Blaine.
All had him in the office,
and
he had a great time.
Oh, that's so awesome.
But the most interesting thing to me about that was, when I built this store, when me and Darren built, and Sarah built the store, I found a sense of community that I didn't really know existed down here.
Yeah.
I've been here all my life, but I didn't. Until you have something like this, you don't understand. You get it. You get it.
So that is actually going to be my question. The reason I talk about Sinistral is because it was because you were family.
Yeah,
everybody
right.
showed up. Yeah. Greg Michael was awesome and stuff, but it was Pete Evan coming.
Right.
So,
but my point to this was, the next day, the Tone that owned
Papa Monkey,
which I'm still bitter that he sold the place. I hope it's doing great.
He's doing good.
I know. He lets us know how good he's doing.
Yeah, I know. The picture's on Facebook. Right?
Me and him had been friends since the day that he moved in over there.
Yeah.
Not super tight friends.
Yeah, but...
We laugh, we get along, and we share a lot of similar beliefs. And he wrote me this heartfelt text. And he's never been heartfelt about thank you for what you do for this community and thank you for what you did for Blaine. Never occurred to me that I did anything.
But then
all the different business owners, Chris Sellers, everybody was writing me these things.
And
I get teary-eyed talking about this right now.
It's great.
But I didn't realize how important that stuff was.
Yeah.
And that fueled me to do more.
Yeah.
Like when I realized what we are down here, now my entire focus in life has changed because of what happened that night at Sinistral. Wow. Not because Brett showed up, but because what I saw
our community.
Seriously,
I love it.
So like, I don't know if you guys have seen since then. My main guitar that I play, have you seen this?
No.
My main guitar that I play all over the world, I had a photographer friend of mine go out on 95 and take a picture of the Manassas exit.
And they
painted that on the guitar. I had it in the back here. I had it shipped at the end of the year. We just did CMT, the Country Music Channel, Crossroads thing.
Yeah.
The Crossroads special, we taped that. It was Brett and a country artist called Chris Jansen. Crossroads is a thing where a rock guy and a country guy, we all get together and we play each other's songs.
Oh, that's cool.
And I went to the film crew and I said, more important than me is this guitar. Get as many shots of this guitar. And it's been airing all for the last month. And it's an hour long special. And there's probably 15 shots on the camera, the entire TV, and it's just so cool. And when we were in the editing room, one of the girls that is like high up at CMT, she's like, "Your guitar, that's a town in Virginia. You come up 95, isn't it?" I pass it all the time. And then we played. I already had a guitar. We played in South Carolina this year. Early in the year, there's a place called. It's a festival. It's another country music festival called the Barefoot Music Festival. 65,000 people jam-packed, and they had these gigantic screens. You know, when crowds are that big, you ever heard of one of those concerts where they have screens as big as a skyscraper?
Yeah. Yep.
And I have a couple pictures of my guitar. And people, a lot of people travel to that festival every year.
Yeah.
And all day long, probably till midnight that night, people were finding me. I'm from Manassas. I live in Manassas.
I take a lot of pride that I take
a piece of Manassas with me every night on every stage I play.
Yes, that's awesome.
Wow, that is beautiful.
I love it. Oh my gosh. That is so awesome.
Yes. So you talked a lot about the how to get to number one. That has changed over the years. It used to be a million records were sold. Now, if you're number one, I don't know what it is, but are there other things that have changed or evolved in the music industry over the last 30 years that you've been playing?
Yeah. A lot of things that I could go on and on about.
46 years you've been playing. Sorry.
I'm at a unique age, and because I started so young, I'm connected to people that are older than me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I know the old school business way more than most people my age. I'm about 10 years ahead because of how young I started with my way of thinking and the business. But I'm also young. I love technology. It's already been almost 40 years since the digital thing came out, the MP3s came out, that changed. And everyone still talks like that's brand new.
Right.
Yeah. It's been at least 35 years since that hit the market. And there's still people from the 80s are like, yeah, the digital thing ruined the music business. I'm like, you got to quit talking about that. Yes. We're in the new way.
Right, right.
But I embraced it. Right, I remember the first time I emailed a song or something.
You're like,
oh my gosh.
And I went, this changes everything.
Yeah.
I can get my music to anyone that will hear it. I don't need labels. I don't need managers. I don't need anything. And I embraced that. And so,
that is so cool.
So the way the industry works now is it's in your hands. Mm-hmm. It is in the artist's hands.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, a good song finds its way.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you, all these people that are sitting around going, I should have been a millionaire because my great song, No, Your Song Sucks. Because if the song's good,
it's going to find its way.
It takes is one person. If I play a song for you and you love it,
enough, that's it.
You're going to go tell everyone
that's
you know.
Right.
And you're going to tell song. It just takes one person.
Yeah.
And then viral, the word viral, which is new to the world.
But,
but music's like that. And it just doesn't, my book, it's the same things in the book industry. My book debuted at number one on rock and roll autobiographies on Amazon, right? And I had a little bit of a breath moment. I said, oh my God, that's the coolest thing in the world. How many copies did it sell? Like 600.
Hey,
you know what I'm saying?
600.
Yeah. But it was number one for a couple days.
The title.
You can't ever take that away.
Right.
And that's the important part about life is I get
perspective.
Older. Yeah.
It's perspective.
As I get older, the one thing I learned, because in the music business, I remember the day I played Jiffy. We're talking about it. I remember, I had my children. Me and my wife hadn't broke up yet. Family was important. And I remember thinking, all right, I'm going to play Jiffy Lube. And I'm going to tell Brad I'm done. Because you can't ever take that away from me. For the rest of my life, I can tell. I don't want to go home and play Jiffy Lube. But then you wake up the next morning.
Oh, God.
And you go, oh, no. What can I do to beat that now?
Yeah.
And, what's my point of that? I can't remember. You asked me a question that inspired me about that. Just about being number one and stuff.
Yeah. What's changed in the industry?
Right. Because social media. Talking about the social media effect. How do you, you've kept up with it.
I suck at it. But
you have the right attitude, though. You didn't
suck at it.
With it, and you encourage other people to do that, too. You have to embrace it.
I try to embrace it. My son's pursuing a music career. And he hates social media. I'm like, this isn't happening for you.
You gotta get it.
If you don't get it, you gotta post, I'm playing here. That's all you're ever gonna get.
But you're kind of the same, except over the holidays, you got sappy and you said you never do that. I don't get sappy on social media. You didn't say those exact words, but you say I don't usually do this. Yeah. But you wrote a beautiful 3-paragraph Facebook post about your son meeting an old friend of yours in New York.
Oh, well, the guy wasn't an old friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
He's Doc McGee. Doc McGee.
Biggest
music manager in history.
Okay, cool. You're very proud.
What I was proud of was my son drove all the way to Madison Square Garden by himself to see the last Kiss concert.
And he went up there
and instead of partying, instead of getting into mischief, he managed to find the most important guy in the entire museum. And I was proud of that.
Yeah, that's really cool. It was a beautiful story. Awesome. I loved it.
That is awesome.
So I don't want to leave this setting until we hear the story of Shining Soul.
Yes.
Like, why Shining Soul? Why are you a candle maker? How did this happen?
So this comes from that low point. It all ties in. So that low point had happened that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And we had been filming, I think, the last season of Rock of Love. I'm not a TV guy. Britt loves to be on TV. I don't do fucking shit about TV. Those cameras, when you're filming a reality show, those cameras are in your face 24/7.
Yeah.
I'm not the star. I'm not even an actual person on that show. unless I do something that's going to get them ratings.
Right, of course. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. The very first season of Rock of Love, the biggest thing that happened that was one of the most played episodes is I got drunk and threw a bottle at the wall.
There you go. I said it. And I threw a bottle.
And they edited it like I threw it at one of the girls.
Oh. And
we all laugh about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we've been out on the road for 9 months because this season of Rock of Love was called Rock of Love Boss. And I don't know if you know, Rock of Love was a dating show. It's just like The Bachelor, but it was with Brett. Mm-hmm. And the first two seasons were filmed in a house just like The Bachelor.
Okay.
So the third season was out on the road. The girls got their own tour bus and they went with us on the road every day. And so the cameras were around me all the time.
Yeah.
From the second you woke up to you went to bed. And again, I'm not the star of the show. I'm not even in the show unless I do something worthy. But they're waiting for me.
Yeah. They gotta watch you.
And it twisted me. It twisted me to a dark space.
Yeah.
And me and my wife had broken up.
Yeah.
And in the darkness of my friends, all that stuff I told you about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I came home and my wife had moved out of the house and my house was empty.
Wow.
And I've always been a candle guy.
Yeah.
And a couple of friends of mine had bought, or one friend of mine had bought me a candle that smelled, was supposed to smell like a wood burning fireplace.
Mm.
And I was sitting in my home completely alone in the dark.
Wow.
And for the first time in my entire life, remember I told you I never wanted to, every day of my life, guitar.
Yeah.
When I got home after that season of Rock Love, I didn't want to look at guitar. I'd never felt that in my life. Right. It felt weird. Right. I felt like I didn't have a leg and I just didn't know what to do. And I lit that candle complete dark and it didn't smell up my whole house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what they're supposed to do, right? And I just thought, man, I wonder. I've never had a hobby in my life. I really into candles. I wonder if I can just figure out how to make one of these.
Oh, my God.
So I woke up and I decided to go to Michael's so I could get candle making kit. And I was just this grubby looking old white dude. And you could see every mother buying their kids stuff for their art project.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, what is this
guy doing in here? You know? Yeah.
And I said, yeah, candle making supplies. And the woman points this way. I go over there and I get the stuff. I go home. And it's the first time in my life since I touched a guitar that I felt creative about something.
Wow.
I was like, this is cool, man. And I became a mad scientist. My friends came over like,
a mad scientist.
Yeah, that's you're like great. Yeah. You're a mixologist with the candles.
My friends came over like, this looks like a meth lab.
Love it.
You know, and for months I just dove, but something else changed is as I started to do the research, I started to understand the difference in paraffin wax and soy wax.
Okay.
Soy wax is a much cleaner, much healthier option. You know, when you burn a candle and you get the black soot, that's paraffin wax.
Okay.
That's what most candles, until about 10 years ago, that's what most candles were all made of.
Okay.
Soy wax doesn't do that. It's clean. But the other thing is the soy wax is farmed and made in the Midwest of the United States. And because of all the touring and everything we do in the Midwest, because that's our brand of rock and roll is still huge out there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent an enormous amount of time in that, in Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, all that stuff. And I got to know so many of the farmers. Mm-hmm. They're our fans, the farmer community.
That's so cool.
And I know their struggles. You know, in the 80s, I was a gigantic John Mellencamp fan because and he did that Farm Aid thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always been very aware of the struggle of the American farmer. And I remember thinking to myself, if I just make 5 candles and sell them, I've helped some farmer.
There you go.
I've helped them a little bit. And then I started to realize my kids were going to follow my path. They're not going to go to college.
Yeah.
They're not. They don't care about school at all. And I thought, I don't want them to have the struggles I had. Let me start an online business to teach them entrepreneurial skills.
So cool.
Meaning, if I sell a candle for $30, I did not make $30.
Right.
What those kind of skills. You know, so we started online. And
that's
for
so cool.
Years, I had a partner named Sarah. And I didn't tell anyone that it was my business. Before the store. We were in business 3 years before we opened the store.
Okay.
And I was online only. And I used my friend Sarah as figurehead, because She was a 35-year-old mother. She looked like the face of the
candle, company. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I was like, I don't want to tell anyone it's me. Yeah. I don't want it to succeed on its own. Yeah. And one day she came to me. We were doing good. We were having fun. We were selling candles. And one day she came to me. She goes, you got to tell people it's you. I said, no, let's not do that. You have to tell people this is you. It's the only way we're going to move this to a different level. Mm. And she convinced me. And one night we made a video in my kitchen. I said, this is my company. Because all along I've been like, this is my friend Sarah's company. By, you know, I've been endorsing it, but not mine. And I announced it. And sales went through the roof that night. Everything changed that night.
That's a great story.
Amazing.
And then my website got out of control.
Yeah.
And that's when Darren came in. Darren and me had been friends since Cub Scouts.
That's what he told me. Yeah.
I've known him since Cub Scouts. But he is a brilliant web designer, is what he is.
Wow.
And more than any of this, and that's what I needed, right? So he built the website, and we decided to be partners. Mm-hmm. And at the time, there was a shop through this wall called Love Charlie. Mm-hmm. And she also owned this shop. But this, she had two businesses. Love Charlie was her baby, and whatever she was doing in this, her partner, it all went bad. Mm-hmm. And the guy that owns this building said, if you can find someone to take it over, no harm, no foul. And she just called me because she'd been selling my candles. She's like, you ever think you might want a candle shop? And me and Darren had just partnered together in this. And it was never supposed to be that because the world's e-commerce.
Yeah.
So in my brain, I was like, this is kind of going backwards.
Right.
So, but everything just kept telling us it was the right thing to do. Like, we were looking for reasons not to. Not in a bad way.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we were like, there's no reason not to do this. And so we built a store and opened it up. And here we are, you know. But the big part of the drive for me was
the kids.
The kids and the helping other American businesses.
Yeah.
You know, the wood wicks that we use are made in Indiana, or Illinois, I'm sorry. And every single part of that, the Libby glass, the wood, every single part of that's an American product. Maybe the labels are made somewhere else. I've never sourced that out. Yeah. But every single part of that's an American product, and that's important to me.
It is.
You know, and I don't know if that's a small, old school way of thinking. I'm not.
It's heart. It's your heart.
Yeah.
And it's what you want to be known for.
Yeah.
You cared about your country.
Yeah.
Promoting and helping other people.
But also, it's funny, I say that and watching and hearing your voice so kindly say that. I understand you understand, and that makes me think that I did the right thing. But I also believe in the whole world. Mm-hmm. So as much as I care about my country, I'm not like screw Japan or screw China. I wish we could find a way.
It takes everybody. It takes everybody.
You know, but China's thriving, so I'm not too worried about that.
Right.
But we're not. So at that point, you know what I'm saying?
Farmer needs
So,
you have a heart for it.
So that's what this became all about.
That is so amazing. You know? Wow.
I'm just happy you got Darren into this podcast.
I know.
Somehow.
Yeah. You know? Yes. He is the man.
And he's got a new shop in downtown Manassas as well, Black Metal.
Yeah.
So I think.
I always tell the story. I'm as honest as a day is long.
Yeah.
He's so happy over there. And that thing is a success. People love it. I told him when it started, I was like, the idea is great. That name's the worst name you've ever
had. I'm like, Mercantile. Yeah. I don't know. Cutting women going, I don't know. It's here.
I'm like, why don't you just call it Manassas Mercantile? Why would you do that? But the name's very important to him. It ties into his love for music and some different things.
It works for him.
But I remember going, Darren, the idea is great. The shop's going to be successful. The name is terrible. And,
he's doing fine.
But he's doing great. He's killing it.
Great.
And he's happy because he joined this business because he likes business.
Yeah.
But he's not incredibly passionate about candles.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you walk in that store over there, that's a turning inside his head.
Yeah.
Everything's scattered everywhere.
Yeah.
That's
in there.
And so he's living in his own head over there right now.
It works for him.
It's so great for him.
That's awesome.
So, but he's still 100% over here, too. He's still involved in everything over here.
So, last, before we wrap up, your inspirational words. Give me a few inspirational words for a kid, somebody who's looking to do what you've done.
Oh, geez.
How would you inspire them?
You know, Thank you for asking me that. Yeah. As I've gotten older, and I say this a lot on Facebook, that's all that's important to me now, is inspiring other people. Yeah. Everything I do from this point is to encourage other people to believe that they can do anything they want. And I say it all the time. Anybody can do anything. And when I write a book, and you know, I have the new hot sauce company, the Virginia Sauce and Spice Company with Clark, and all the music things I do, and I have several other projects that I'm doing. And everything I do is to prove to anyone that anyone can do anything. You just do it, and believe in yourself.
That's right.
This comes from Brett, but I believe it is the biggest rule is bet on yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, who else is going to?
That's right.
That's a great line. I love
perfect
that.
Perfect way to wrap it up. Oh my gosh. Yeah, thank
bet on
you so
yourself.
Much. Yeah, thank and you that is a wrap.
Do I get this or do I get a fist bump? What do we do?
I don't know. That is definitely a wrap. Thank you for joining us on the other Prince William. We're so
happy.
Prince
William's great, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, the other one wants to be king someday, but we've got our own greatness right here.
That's right.
And so, thank you, Pete.
Thank you guys for having me.
Great wrap up. And everybody, remember to support your local businesses, your entrepreneurs, and your artists.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for our discussion. Be sure to check out the note caption and learn more about today's guest and more about their work. Please be sure to check out our sponsor. This is a great way to support our podcast and the work we continue to do discussing business in the greater Prince William County, Virginia region. If you have suggestions, topics, or questions to discuss with the team, please be sure to add your comments in the videos on our YouTube page. We read your comments and value your feedback. If you haven't already subscribed, please be sure to subscribe now and stay updated on all the upcoming guests and announcements. Again, thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to bringing you more inspirational stories from local business owners, creators, and entrepreneurs from the amazing business community here in our area.